Welcome back to another episode of the Stephen Reid Podcast. On today's episode, we are so lucky to be talking to Kevin Bradford out in Dubai about what it's like to live and work here. So I hope you enjoy. I'm here in Dubai with a new friend of mine, Kevin Bradford. Is that right? Yeah. Today's actually the first time I've ever met you, and you reached out to me on Instagram after seeing the video I did with Dave Erasmus on YouTube about my boat, and said, basically, do you want to do a house swap or a boat swap, essentially?
Or a life swap, yeah.
A life swap, yeah. So I was really curious by that idea, and it's not really the type of thing I've ever been asked to do or felt comfortable doing, but for some reason I just thought, why not? Let's do it. And so far it's paid off.
There you go.
You exist and you're a real person. So that's a start. And we've talked a lot already this evening over dinner about Dubai and your work life and that type of things. But something I'm really curious about actually is the fact that you do a lot of cycling and a lot of running and things like that.
Yeah, multi-sport, a little bit of swimming, just endurance sports, basically. Yeah, I enjoy that sort of thing. And it's a great place out here. The weather's pretty consistent. Sometimes a little bit warm, but it's
good. So you were saying earlier it gets to about like 45, was it?
Yeah, it can creep over 45. It's more the humidity though. The humidity's creeps up. You know, I think the humidity in the UK is, you know, goes to 80 to 100 sometimes, but it, with the combination of the heat, it's really bad in the summer. The humidity is just ridiculous. You can't even stand outside for 10 minutes and then you need a shower. It's that bad. So
how does that then affect
a lot of early mornings? Yeah, 4 o'clock wake ups. You have to be pretty dedicated and just get that before the sun rises. Basically, you can maybe last an hour if you're cycling in the sun. I guess 10 o'clock in the midsummer, once you go past 10 o'clock, that's it. Like, you're pretty much going to cook.
10 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, you're going to cook like really bad. You're in trouble, basically, if you're out there. And a lot of people do get in trouble when they're out in the cycle tracks and stuff. Sure. So.
You were showing me earlier there's actually a couple of cycle tracks that go out from the city centre itself out into the desert.
There's amazing facilities here. It's world class facilities, to be honest. There's hundreds and hundreds of kilometers now of dedicated cycle track, and just no vehicles on it. It's very, very smooth. You can do some, you know, nice speeds on it, and it's good for the Strava account or whatever. Sure. Whatever account you're using. Yeah, it makes you look pretty strong. So yeah, we're very lucky here.
And how did you get into doing these types of sports in the first place?
So
or back in the UK?
I was in the military when I joined when I was 21, and I kind of discovered, I had no clue until that point, basically, that I could, I never ran or did anything in school. I just, you know, I considered myself pretty useless at it. And then I kind of discovered once I was in the military that, you know, obviously there's a mental side to it. And didn't really have a choice.
It's just part of the training.
That's part of the training, yeah. And then I kind of discovered that I could do it, especially on when we did the medicals and different things. I did the lung tests and the VO2 max tests and different things, and they were very high. And the doctors and stuff were saying, "Well, don't you do any endurance sport?" So and then I didn't really do a lot with it. I did a little bit of it in the military, just because it got me out of work. And then I guess when I came back to Dubai and I was a little bit more mature, I came to Dubai when I was 28, and I just started because it's weather's good and it's a lot more accessible. And yeah, I just started out here. And
like you were saying earlier, there's a big following of this kind of sport out here.
Yeah, it's huge. We have a huge Tri Dubai over here. We have cycling clubs. It's very, very popular, yeah. Okay. Especially with a cycle track, and now we have, you know, some world-class bike shops, and it's almost cycling has almost overtaken golf, and you know, golf is the one of the biggest sports in Dubai historically, but cycling is definitely up there now.
I mean, just for those of you who aren't watching on our non-existent camera, we can look out of this window in your apartment and see a golf course, which is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, there's three golf courses there, actually.
Three?
Yeah,
in the one spot.
There's a par three and two, a championship 18 hole and a non-championship 18 hole, so it's pretty amazing.
There's a big sport out here, though.
Yeah, it's huge. There's must be 10 plus golf clubs in Dubai, and it's not too big, so
sure.
Yeah, it's huge. But cycling's rivaling it at the moment, I'd say. You have the Dubai Tour and Abu Dhabi Tour, so a lot of pros coming over here and different things. And you can go an hour outside of Dubai and you're in the mountains as well, so it's very, very popular.
Wow, okay, so it's not all flat like the course we saw earlier.
Yeah, there's you can go to Al Ain, which is probably about an hour and a half, and there's a Jebel Afiq climb, that's quite a famous one. They do it on the one of the tours out here, and Jebel Jais. There's quite a few mountains, and you can go out to Shoka, it's an hour away from here, and some good climbing there too.
Wow,
Hatta Dam.
And so was cycling the sport that you took up first?
It was running first.
Running?
Yeah, okay. I did a lot of endurance running, kind of long distance out in some of those locations. I just taught off-road and different things. I kind of enjoyed that because it was something that kind of transitioned from the military.
And what was a long distance look like for you?
For a weekend long run, we used to do about 36 kilometers, about 1,000 meters of elevation gain. But that was on rough trail, if you like, yeah. So like rocks. So not so runnable. But yeah, we used to do that pretty much every week. And then obviously I couldn't get out to the mountains all the time. So there's a nice trail running club out here. It's good. Good community and some good races as well up in the Ras Al Khaimah Mountains and different things.
I saw a couple of trophies and medals and things that were in your room, actually. What has been your most successful sport or distance?
I guess I'm fairly equal on the running and the cycling. I guess, so duathlon is probably where I'm most competitive. I qualified for Great Britain at age group amateur level twice. That was 2017 and 2018 I did. I didn't go to the championships for one reason or another. But yeah, I kind of just discovered that that's kind of my level. I think I'm kind of top 10 age group, you know, European standard or world standard. That's just amateur age group, it's not elite age group.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it's still tough, and there's some, UK's got a lot of good athletes there, so I was happy enough with that. You know, maybe it's something I'll go back to.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier with the military that that's when you realised that actually there's a huge mental aspect to it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something, I've done a little bit of running in the past, but not really dabbled in cycling particularly, purely because I see it as such a grueling sport,
yeah.
And going up and down those mountains and the distances that people cover as well, and
yeah,
the athletes, and I couldn't imagine having the mental stamina even to think about that.
Yeah, it's hard here with the heat as well and the training. Obviously you go back to the UK and it's a huge advantage, just the air density is, the air quality is a lot worse here, so it's almost like just having a turbocharger when you go back to the UK. Because
okay.
The air is so pure and clean.
So it's a bit like when people go and train in altitude.
In altitude, it's very, if you use it properly, i.e. don't train all the way through the summer like an idiot, it can be beneficial, yeah. And you become very efficient in using water. And then you find when you come out of the summer into the winter, you don't need much fluids. And your body becomes very, you know, adapts to the conditions.
Mm.
But it's, I'm someone who doesn't like the heat. Just keeping me cool is kind of the hardest thing. It's kind of the body heat is my limiter, really, when running hard.
Okay.
You know, my head just feels like it's going to explode and sweating a lot.
It sounds terrible.
It's hard, yeah. But it's just, you just get used to it. If you want to do it, then that's what you have to do. Or be on the treadmill all the time, which is okay too.
Sure.
But that's hot as well.
Why is it that you choose to do these brutal things?
I think you have to do, it has to be done, you know. It has to be... you have to push yourself out of the comfort zone. You have to explore. You have to go to those places where it's difficult. to kind of work out kind of what sort of person you are, and yeah, or just you'll never really find out who you are and what you can achieve and what can be done, which is sad, I think. So look, I've definitely not fully explored, but at least I kind of know what I'm capable of. You know, I think there's definitely a lot more that I could have been a lot more dedicated, and I self-coached for a long time out of stubbornness a lot of the time, rather than after some bad coached experiences. I think if I'd met some of the people I know now earlier, I would have been a lot better, but that's life, you know. So yeah, I'm happy with what I did. I'm happy with some of the times in the races and different things, and I think I've definitely helped push, in my own tiny little way, kind of the fitness scene in Dubai up a little bit, especially with the cycling. We've done some fast laps around the cycle track as teams and in team time trial format, so four-man format. We're doing anywhere up to like 48 kilometers an hour average for 50 kilometer stretch, so it helps create a lot of competition in the area that wasn't there. So I think I've played my part. And it's good. So somebody comes and takes the baton and pushes it on further. Yeah. And it's kind of development, because when I first come here, the standard wasn't that high. There was a group of people that were reasonable, and then, quite a big gap, okay. Should say. But I think it's developed. It's just like any developing place, you know, the scene matures, and you go to any race in the UK, and there's a lot of fast people there. So.
And yeah. Are you in a team then, or are you solo?
I have been, not at the moment, but I've been in a couple of teams. I was sponsored by, I think sponsors are generous out here, the shops especially, so you can ride for one of the teams like Cycle Hub or Ride Bike Shop or Frontier Sports, another one out here. So yeah, I've been part of a few teams, and it's been good fun.
What has been your most grueling race then?
I think the qualifiers for the GB duathlon was grueling, mainly because it was in Bedford. The temperatures were so low; it was like 5 degrees, which doesn't sound terrible if you're from living in the UK. But coming from here, and then it's very hard to get the body going in those temperatures when you're used to being warm all the time. And then it's just hard. Like, you have to qualify in top. I think it's top four in your age group, or top three in the age group. I can't remember what it was now, but the standard's so high, especially in the bracket I was in, like the 30 to 34. There was two ex elites in it, and they're just there on the day because they want to race, so they take up some of the spots just by default. So you're not going to beat those, you know. These are almost pros, so it's just luck of the draw who turns up. And It's just a brutal format. So it's sprint duathlon, so it's like 5 kilometer run, 20k bike, and then 2.5 kilometer run, and it's just basically just full on for an hour. You know, most people do a 5k run as a kind of an event. Yeah. So that's the start, and then you've got to get on the bike, go for half an hour, and then you've got to run half the 5k again at the same speed.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
And it sounds to me like you're doing those distances, but intensely. You're doing it almost.
Yeah, it's pretty much full.
As a sprint,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah. That was draft legal format as well. So you have draft legal and non-draft legal. So the draft legal's on a road bike, and then you can use the competitors to kind of get behind and block the wind. Whereas the European format is solo, which I prefer the solo format. Because in the draft format, it's basically a running race. So you basically have to run like hell to get to the bike. Otherwise, if you don't get to the bike, everyone gangs up and then just leaves the rest of the field. So okay. It's even harder, that one, because you have to run. I have to run flat out to keep with a pack, and then they all just hang on to me on the bike, and then they just run past me at the end. So it's, or you just, if you don't run as hard, you just get left. Because they team up and they work together on the bike. So
how does it differ then between being solo and being part of a team in terms of the mentality and the race format for you when you're out there on the track?
I think for me, I really enjoyed a team. I enjoyed a team format. I enjoyed a team time trials, just because, yeah, it's not just about you. And it's just a nice... it's almost like it's just you get into a nice rhythm when you're working with other people. So there's different things, you know, like cycle racing, you watch like Tour de France, that's kind of a team event as well, but it's very hard to organize an amateur team to be able to perform because of the, you know, like in a pro team, basically everyone's at the same standard or a similar standard. Here, the standards vary. Everyone can't be the star. So it's very hard to get organized. But I think in the more time trial specific, which is like a four-man format, as I mentioned there, it's kind of controlled and you can kind of work out who's strongest and position yourself. And it's quite tactical and it's quite fun. Mm. It's quick as well. You know, we're over 50 kilometers an hour for a long time, up to 60, 65 sometimes. So
I think something,
and you're like an inch off the person's wheel in front sure. of us at 60 kilometers an hour.
It's small pretty, margins, isn't
pretty
it?
Crazy, to be honest.
And something yeah. people often, myself included, yeah. neglect to think about is the tactics that are involved yeah. as well. And it looks just like, you know, you're just gunning it on a bike, but actually,
yeah, you don't last very long if you're just gunning it. So yeah, it's good. It's all just self-discovery of why I do it, just to kind of find out what you can achieve and yeah, what's possible. It's good.
And so if you've got a big race coming up, then what does the training regime look like for you?
So for me, probably just 3 to 4 months I would do. I'm not a huge trainer in terms of compared to a lot of people. I definitely struggle to get myself going a lot. Some people just get addicted to it and they're obsessed and they're so just
over, in terms of the motivation.
Most people, I'd say, are overtraining. They overtrain and they do too much, whereas I struggle to get myself going. For me, the whole thing is just a mental struggle a lot of the time. It's hard to get out of bed for me. All these pathetic things, but that's where the wins are for me. Like, get up every morning disciplined and do it. It's difficult for me. Some people just wake up at 5 every morning, no problem, and they just but I have an ability or a natural ability, so I guess I don't need to work as hard sometimes. But it's just everyone has their own strengths. Some people are natural, some people work harder and they can beat me because they work harder. Some people, yeah, so I'd probably do 3 to 4 months of 10-hour weeks, which is not that much really, you know, try an hour and a bit a day.
Okay. And that's, so is that every yeah. day then?
Yeah. Yeah. Or sometimes twice a day. Yeah.
Wow. And so you work full time as well. So yeah. you'll be going before and after yeah. work and doing yeah. like a full day there.
Yeah.
Where do you find the time to fit in, say, eating yeah. then or
yeah,
sleeping?
You have to, so I work in an office, so that's really bad for sports, but it's a lot of recovery time at work as well, but it's kind of bad for the legs because you've gone from exercising to sitting and then your legs just seize up. You're a physio, you know how it works.
Sure.
That's difficult and it's hard to kind of get them going again at night, but also you're resting at work. So I'm resting anyway. Mm. So, and just a lot of sleep. I have to be very disciplined on the sleep. I need 10 hours sleep. So I have to go to bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock to get up for the morning before the sun rises
yeah.
To do it. In the winter here, it's okay, but in the summer, like if you miss that window or do it indoors, I have indoor trainer as well. So yeah, just have to try and be creative, use the treadmills, if I ever leave Dubai, I'll be just so easy because I can just train, you know, anytime I like. You have to be quite disciplined to not miss sessions.
Okay. Okay. And so, has your diet changed then? You mentioned obviously your sleep and your day-to-day life.
Yeah,
does your diet change when you're training?
I pretty much eat full vegan the whole time. So I eat very simply, just clean. Try and eat a lot of vegetables. I eat a lot of carbs. I just don't see how it's possible to go on these restrictive diets. And I basically just eat what I want till I'm full. Just clean.
Okay.
Sensible food, really.
So you're not aiming for certain calories or
no.
micros.
I think anytime you go down
nutrients.
That road, I just don't see how it's sustainable. You know, if you're going to measure calories, then how can you measure calories forever? You can't. So anything that's not sustainable full time, I just don't do anymore. I'm not saying that's, you know, if people want to lose weight and stuff, then that's, you know, a good way to kind of find out. Look, basically, if I'm training properly, I'm burning enough, so I don't even, I just piling in food
as much as you can.
Yeah, within reason. I just eat what I like. I eat pizzas quite a lot. Just take the cheese off, and then that's 800 calories of grease taken off. Yeah. So I just do things like that. Just whatever I want to eat, I'll eat it. But I try and eat a lot of fruit. I don't take supplements. I have done, but I think fruit is the best recovery ever. It's just full of carbs, full of vitamins, minerals. There's a lot of, you know, liquid in there as well, and I just don't get like the big sugar crashes. Like I used to get huge sugar crash after supplements and different things like that. So just anything that's natural, basically. Yeah. It's not rocket science, but we all just want this magic potion that kind of tells us that it's going to work and stuff. So I've just kind of phased a lot of that out, not all at once, but yeah, it works. It's worked just fine on fruit and vegetables and carbs and rice and potatoes.
It's good to hear that it's not rocket science, and that it does, all it boils down to is eating clean and healthily and just eating enough to sustain what you're doing, essentially.
Yeah, but look, I'm not a nutritionist, so I'm sure, and from what I can see, I've looked at nutrition a lot over the years, and I think there is cases where something just doesn't work for them and they just balloon in with weight, and some people do hold weight more than others. I'm quite fortunate, my metabolism's high, so I don't think it's one size fits all, but I don't think it's far off. I think you can just tailor it a little bit. But food's just crazy, isn't it? I've just met so many like doctors and highly educated people who are triathletes, and they put like all this time into sport and stuff, and they just get it so wrong on food. The classic like Dubai post-workout breakfast, everyone goes to somewhere for breakfast, is just like, you know, the Instagram breakfast with the like avocado and the poached egg and the salmon. Like, I just think that's a terrible recovery meal. I just don't see why you would want to eat fatty avocado, fatty egg, fatty salmon. Like, why would you want to eat a load of fat? You've just worked out. Like, I don't get that. So, people, you know, can eat what they want. And then they're struggling to lose weight. That's what I'm trying to say. So I just eat muesli or fruit or anything. That's, smoothies are great. Smoothies are good for me.
Awesome. So let's go back a little bit then, because we've sort of skipped a little bit, and I'm sure people who are listening to this would want to know a little bit of the background, really. So you grew up in the UK.
Yeah.
And did you say Shropshire?
Yeah, Shropshire. So I was from this small town, Oswestry. It's not far from Shrewsbury, which most people know. Oswestry's on the Wales-England border.
Sure. And so you were there until what age, roughly?
So I was there till 21, where I joined the military.
You joined the military at 21?
Yeah, 21. Okay. But once I'd finished the military service, I kind of came back to the area and worked a little bit after that. So okay. I full-time left the UK at 28.
28?
Yeah.
And you came to Iraq initially?
Yeah, I came to work. I was working in satellite communications at the time, and we had a large client out in the Rumaila field in southern Iraq. So I came to help with a project there, delivery, and I lived with a customer basically, and they were building a large camp in the area. It was a huge, like 1 kilometer squared camp, which they were basically going to hand over to the, this was all post-war. It was kind of a collaboration with the Iraqi government that they were going to build this huge, basically enhance the production of the oil exportation, because a lot of the equipment down there was pretty archaic. So BP and CNPC, the Chinese and the Iraqi SOC all came together to build a huge, it's like a town basically in the middle of the desert in Rumaila. And I was doing the communications for that. So that was quite a lot of, it was about $7 million contract just for the internet and phones.
Yeah.
for that camp. So Crikey. it was a good challenge. It was good.
And then, so you, how long were you in Iraq before you came to Dubai?
Yeah, so I did month on, month off there for a year. And I was kind of, I had a Dubai contract at the time, but I was just traveling in to work and then back out. And I was working with a partner. We were just rotating, me and him, another British guy I worked with. And then, yeah, I got approached by another company who wanted to set up in the Middle East. They were the market leader at the time, and then they were setting up an office, and they just wanted some experienced people from the region just to come and help, really. So, yeah, I went to them. That was basically program management and some minor project management and different things, and then it turned into operations management, looking after the whole region. So, yeah, it just kind of grew on top of each of us itself.
And what was the best thing, would you say, then, about living and working in a place like Iraq?
Iraq. I think Iraq was kind of one of the highlights of my career, almost, just because it was so difficult what we were trying to achieve there. So just the satisfaction. So just imagine the Earth's just been there's nothing down there. It's just been completely obliterated, everything, and a lot of it's just dust and sand and mines, and it's just a blank canvas. What I'm trying to say. So delivering communications via fiber, via satellite links, via lots of different mediums was just an achievement. Just to do that, you know, just to deliver what we did down there, just felt good. Just to really, you know, when we had that contract signed, nobody really believed we could deliver what we sold. So that was probably the reward in terms of my career, but it was also a reward in terms of just spending time with the Iraqi people. Some very nice, and trying to understand the fallout of the Iraq war and kind of what that looked like for some of the people down there as well. So it's definitely one of the highlights of, I don't think I can replicate it either. I'm not one of these people who's gonna like chase around the war. You find a lot of these contractors, they kind of just love it being out there, and the drama of it all, and you know, the danger. I'm not one of these people, really. I think you be careful what you wish for. So I'm not going to chase around war zone after war zone, looking for these experiences. So I don't think I can ever really replicate what I achieved there, to be honest. But I'm also aware that it was a while ago. You know, it was 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm trying not to hang on to these experiences too much and try and look forward. But I get asked that a lot. People interviewing me and stuff asked me, and that was the highlight for me, just because it was a good challenge. It was good.
How have you changed then as a result of living and working somewhere like that, and even in Dubai as well, you know, because it is, I can tell you, you know, straight up from spending the last couple of hours here, it is a world of difference compared to UK, especially living my life on a narrow boat on a little quiet canal, you know. It is completely different. And growing up in Shropshire too.
It's
right?
Pretty rural Shropshire, so yeah. I'm even surprised you even came here, to be honest, because I didn't think you would. I just thought you were kind of, yeah, you sometimes find people are just kind of set into their scene and not open to look at the other side of the card. So it's nice to see that you came over. What was the question again?
So how has it changed me?
I guess it's just made me, like, you know, what I'll take with me and what I take with me when I leave, you know, Dubai and go to other places traveling. It's just gratitude, really. I just think it's amazing what they've achieved in this region, and that I've just been able to live in this region in safety. Obviously Iraq wasn't safe, but you know, Dubai is very safe compared to other places in the world. In, you know, had a lot of things taken care of. It's very clean. There's no troubles, there's no violence. Getting to spend time with just different nationalities, just learn a lot about how bad the world really is and how lucky we really are. From Europe, or you know, to have the passports that we have, and just the stuff that I just took for granted. You know, some people I've met in they just can't, you know, just not having access to parts of the world is just mind-boggling, really, to think that I can, you know, you could never go there just because you have certain stamps or colours in your passport, right, or whatever. Okay. That's certainly not going to leave me. Some people have it a lot harder than we do, so that's kind of my takeaway from Dubai.
So your next step then, we talked about it a little bit earlier, you're thinking quite strongly in terms of going travelling and exploring that. Whereabouts in the world would you think of going to first?
This is what I'm not really good at, just kind of planning, but obviously I guess I just go with the wind, and I'd probably try and see as much as I could until I don't want to set off with plans, because I think that can change just on a day to day, or who you meet, or what the weather is, or what happens to you in a certain place. So I think just go with an open mind and just certainly just spend some time just looking at, I spent a lot of time in a lot of places that, you know, are unsavory or not glamorous. Algeria, I spent a lot of time. Egypt, I spent a lot of time. It's quite difficult there as well. Iraq, Afghanistan, I spent a lot of time. So just to see some, like, of the wonders of the world rather than some of the harsh realities of the world would be nice. Just to see some of the bucket list stuff. I haven't done that. That's a whole period of my life that I haven't even ever really thought about or explored. So I don't have the places. I don't know what, but I just guess just start in a country and work my way around it and then move when I feel like moving. Just,
brilliant.
I don't know, that's much of an answer, but it's kind of, yeah, that's what I feel like doing.
Mm.
Maybe I need to prepare more. Maybe, that's not the way to go about it, but I don't know. I'm just open, really, open to ideas.
It's good. And I think we're quite lucky that there are now a lot of opportunities to travel, and it is easier than ever, really, and the world's so connected.
Yeah.
That you probably can get away without planning very
much
at all.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess I don't have the time element. Like, if I went and if I do go and do that, then I'm not up against the clock. So there is no clock. There's no, oh, 1 year I've got to get round. It's just whenever I think I've got a bit of time. So if it takes 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, whatever it takes. But yeah, I do. I guess for just a bit more color on like the geographies and stuff, there's so much on YouTube about Southeast Asia. So that's, you just get drawn towards it. But I guess like Latin America, there's that whole side of the world. I've never even been down there. I've been to America a few times, but you know, Argentina and Mexico and all these places as well. So I don't really know what to expect down there.
Mm.
But I think that could be fun too. And probably just stay away from Europe, because I can do Europe anytime.
Yeah, that's it. And so your family's still based in the UK, so you do essentially have that opportunity there, I suppose. Is cycling and running then, and keeping fit in general, something that you plan to take with you? Once?
Yeah, I think for me it's essential. I have to do it, I think, for me. I think it just keeps like demons away. I think, it just keeps me in a good place. I'm a better person when I do it. I feel better. I have more energy. I have more ambition. When I stop doing it, things do become it's not an addiction. I'm definitely not addicted to it. I do struggle with getting up and doing it, if anything. But I think the health benefits are just, for me, it's essential. Like I have to do it. I can't take that away from my life now. Like, yeah, okay, there's periods where I waver for sure, and I'm not as consistent as I should be, but I think I'm just that type of person that has to do it. I think it's got to be done.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Definitely. And there's a part of me too, especially as a physio, who, you know, I've always done some form of exercise, and it's the times when I don't exercise that I do notice it, and I almost crave it, really. And I think I've been quite lucky recently over the last couple of years to try lots of different things, whether it be running, a bit of yoga, so you know, maybe a bit of swimming in the past, or I did a lot of squash over a couple of years at uni and before that. So I think exercise in general is a really positive thing, and I completely relate to the being a better person, feeling better in yourself. And it's what I do on a day-to-day basis. I go and see people either in their own homes or in hospital, and I do exercise with them. I give them exercise to get better. Yeah. It is a treatment and a medicine almost, really, as much as a pill or what you've got in your fridge is, right?
Yeah, I think it cures everything when I do. When I don't do it, stuff starts to creep in, especially as I get older. I can get a bit down, and things can creep in. If I just am consistent with something, at least every other day or every third day as a minimum, a couple of hours a week, absolute minimum, things are just easy. I think life just goes on smoothly, but when I stop, it's tough. And then you just feel guilty, and I think that the self pressure, and then you're just not that healthy at the same time. So I'm definitely going to try. Obviously, if I travel or anything, I can't take bikes with me, but I'll pack a pair of trainers, and even if it's hiking or whatever, something.
Still a great way to explore as well, a new place, finding some nice spots to go running and see where you get lost to.
That's one thing I look forward to, definitely, because it is kind of the same. It's beautiful out in the dunes and stuff. I've run through the sand a lot of times, and that's very hard as well. But just Europe or wherever it is, the kind of the elevation and the variation of the terrain and the weather and stuff would be something I'd look forward to. It'd definitely make it easier for me to go out and do it. Okay. It's hard. Just some of the routes I have here I've run them a lot of times now, and there's not much on them. So it's sometimes a drag to go and do that when it's 38 degrees outside. Yeah. It's hard.
What have been some of the highlights then from your career in doing duathlons?
What, just sport?
Well, yeah. And the training,
I guess just getting to a level. I always wanted to find my level. There's quite a few pros been out here. I've been friends with quite a few pros. Been lucky enough to train with a few. Just being able to mix with people that do this full time. And that doesn't mean I'm as strong as them, but I can hang with them. Because you get, obviously the drafting advantage in cycling. So you don't have to, that's the good thing with cycling. You don't have to be as strong as someone. You can sit behind and conserve energy. I pretty much got to a level where I could go out of anyone, which felt good, I'm not anywhere near this level of these pro athletes, and I probably don't want to be either. They're training 30-35 hours a week, making not much, because it's a tough life as a pro, unless you're super, super, Johnny Brownlee or someone, then you're raking money in, but the rest don't make too much from what I can tell. So just get into that level where I could be with them and be like one of them, if you like, and they'd ask me to come out, do you want to come out? And I think that's kind of what I wanted to get out of it, so right. I was happy with that.
And you were saying earlier just then even that people don't make a lot of money out of doing these sports, but actually looking at your bike just sat over there, it must cost a fair bit to it take part in.
It does. You can spend a lot. I'd say, I always say this, people ask me about triathlon, so they're like, do I want to be a triathlete? I always say, like, out in Dubai, you could easily spend $10,000 just to get into triathlon. If you're buying like middle of the range equipment, you'd just be amazed at the amount of equipment and how expensive it is. These bikes are not the same price as the cars. That's a ridiculous amount of money. That is insane. But if you can do it for a lot cheaper. You could just go and buy a Halfords bike and just have, do it in your running shoes and just not clip in and stuff. But you're effectively buying speed when you buy a lot of these upgrades and stuff. And
how much of a difference does it actually make then to your...
If you go from like this bike you're looking at now, it's a road bike. So that's not a triathlon bike. So it's a lot more maneuverable, easier in the hills and different things, and probably a lot safer to ride around people, whereas a triathlon bike you're kind of like more aerodynamic, you're pushed over the front a bit more. Probably over 40 kilometers, I'd say 3 minutes just on the bike.
Wow.
That's where you put like wheels on it. Then there's another minute maybe, or 30, 45 seconds. You put a skin suit on, there's another minute. You put a disc wheel on it, there's another 30 seconds. You can just go on forever and just saving and tweaking and saving time, basically buying time. But it all costs a lot of money, you know.
And in a sport where there's fine margins, having that much of a difference is massive.
It does. In road cycling, it doesn't matter so much because it's a bit more dynamic. And obviously, having a better bike, you can... And then you can upgrade the bearings on the bikes, the chains, the weight. It's astonishing what you can spend. You can just go in and drop £8,000 on a bike easy. Like, out here, there's many, many 15,000 pound plus bikes, so many wheel sets that are £5,000 for a wheel set. It's just ridiculous. This is Dubai, like, people just buying stupid stuff.
So with that in mind,
then, use it.
Yeah, yeah. All the gear, but no idea.
Yeah, they call it mammals. We call them middle-aged man in lycra. There's a lot of those out there, just on like these very expensive bikes, almost like status pieces. But look, at least they're buying a bike and they're riding around on it, not buying a car and just burning petrol, I guess. So at least they're trying. When they get a bit aggressive and shouty on the track, it's a bit annoying. But look, it's all positive. It's people just doing a bit of sport. Yeah, if they want that bike to make themselves feel better, they just look stupid on it with a big beer gut. You know what I mean?
What would you say to someone then who's never been on a road bike before, who's never tried to cycle? Where should someone start if they were interested in doing that?
In general, or?
I guess so. Yeah. Take, you know,
it's easy because there's so many closed tracks. You can just go into a closed track. We have three options. One that's a huge 180K or whatever it is long track. There's an autodrome here. You can go in that. That's like a 2.4 loop. So it's a car racing circuit. So you basically have the whole width of the track. It's massive, so you can just go and cycle on the outside. But in the UK, it's a lot scarier. Like, it's hard riding bikes in the UK. You know, drivers don't give you any room. There's potholes everywhere, drains. It's kind of, I guess I'd say if you just, depends what you want to do. If you just get a mountain bike and just go ride down a canal towpath, that's cycling, you know, and go just ride on the pavement somewhere. But if you want to be road racing, or...
Have you ever done mountain biking?
Yeah, I did a lot when I was younger, a lot. I suppose I spent my whole youth. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't really competing, but I just rode everywhere. Did a paper round on it. That was kind of what I did. Before, we didn't have all the, you know, the technology, mobile phones and... What we on Mega Drive, Sega or something back then. So you could only play that for so long before you had to go outside and do something different. So yeah, I spend a lot of time on bikes. Obviously, I find females struggle to get into cycling just through confidence. I find a lot of lads when they were younger, they all had bikes. Some females didn't have bikes for whatever reason. They struggle with confidence sometimes. But just. Be confident, I'd say, on a bike. Don't worry too much and just have a go. Just ride down somewhere safe and you'll be fine. It's just like walking, you know, you pick it up.
So where does the transition then start between just doing it a little bit on a Saturday or a Sunday to then competing? How does one go from that massive jump there?
There's a lot of topics we're talking about here. So, like, road racing is scary and it's dangerous to compete at road cycling. You know, there's big crashes. You need an element of skill. There's no category system, so you just go in all together with the elites and everybody. In the UK, there's a structured, like, Cat 4 or 5 system. It goes to, you know, Cat 5 to Cat 1. And you have to win races to like move through the categories. And then triathlon, I guess people just do like a sprint or a super sprint triathlon and you kind of have to compete to start, don't you? Because you have to go to a race and to do the triathlon. Road cycling is just if you're brave and you want to get involved. It is dangerous, but it's fun. But yeah, I've seen a lot of collarbones and different things go.
Have you ever injured yourself?
No, I haven't. I've been off a couple of times, but lucky. A lot of huge crashes around me. Like, it is. But at the same time, some of the guys that I've ridden with, they've been riding for 5 years and they've never had a single anything. So I definitely think that if you're smart, you can avoid a lot of it. If you're confident, you can avoid. If you're not nervous, you avoid a lot of it. If you're nervous and you're like braking all the time, same as driving a car. If you just keep pressing the brakes every time something happens, you're gonna get hit in the back. If you just ride it with purpose and confidence, you're probably gonna be okay. But you do get caught up in things. Triathlons is a lot safer because it's solo. Still a few crashes and different things, but I've been fortunate. Yeah, and I guess that's kind of why I stopped road racing, because I had a couple of years of like fearlessness where I just didn't care and I was just doing anything I wanted to do and I was just racing every race. And then I guess, yeah, you know, I don't want to end up in hospital over here, to be honest. The hospitals are great, but I'm single, I live on my own, so nobody's going to support me. So yeah, that's probably why I moved into the solo sports a bit, just a bit less danger, a bit less risk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you say there's a certain type of person that takes up these kinds of endurance solo sports?
Yeah, I'd say, I'm trying to think of a stereotype. There's a lot of people that are just on self-discovery to start with, but the ones who take it seriously, yeah, there's a similar traits in people who they just want to, yeah, they're just dedicated people that just want to achieve something in life. And I've got a lot of friends who do this kind of semi-pro, or they're trying to go pro, and they just like doing it, you know. It's just what they enjoy. And with Instagram, all this stuff, you can try and build a brand for yourself now and do some good marketing for local companies or whatever. I think it's harder in Europe. I think it's very hard and very competitive. Out here is a bit of a bubble. You can be something more than you could be in Europe. And then you could probably transfer that back to Europe, I'd say, or anywhere in the world. Mm. Once you kind of, it's easier to build a brand out here and to be recognized just because it's so small and niche. In terms of, it's a small geography, but there's a lot of people doing it.
Yeah. Did you say earlier that off mic that you've been here for about 8 years?
Coming up to seven now. Seven years. Yeah.
How has Dubai changed then over that period? Because I know it is a really rapidly growing.
In terms
place.
Of sport, it's changed hugely. When I first came, it was quite immature, and now it's almost boomed. In, because of all the facilities that the government are putting, they're building world-class facilities everywhere. There's Olympic swimming pools being built, like, so it's your local leisure centre is an Olympic swimming pool size facility, and there's ridiculous cycle tracks, as I mentioned. There's running facilities, there's running tracks at every school, and there's a lot of schools around here, so you can just go and use those. So it's matured, and then you're starting to see it, like a lot of the, it's been taken seriously now. I think there's boxing next door at the golf club tonight. That's a new one. I think it's going to be some big fights very recently. So sports matured. Anthony Joshua has been here a lot, and a lot of the celebrities come endorsing the fitness challenges we have in the summer. They do Dubai 30-30, so it's 30-day, like government promoted, and they really put just events on everywhere so people can just get involved in. It's very proactive for sport and stuff. But in terms of Dubai as a whole, I guess since 2011-12 or when I came, so it was kind of well developed, obviously another 5-6 years on top of that, and it's kind of maturing now. I heard this at somewhere, and someone said it to me once. It was like Dubai is like a teenager in its stage, and it's kind of going into its like 20s now. Like it's 21 in terms of its age and maturity. It was like a teenager where it was just flooded with brands and buildings and accommodation. It was just too much all at once, and it was just immature, and it didn't know what it was. And it's kind of been a lot of this stuff's been filtered out now. You know, the bad business. Yeah, the bad businesses are the businesses that are not sustainable are dropping off, and they're going bankrupt. So only the strong are going to survive, which is good. We get rid of all the rubbish, and then it'll probably cool off for a while, I think. And then, yeah, it's got a good basis to go forward. There's infrastructure. There's everything really that you need, more than you need really. We're very fortunate because nobody really fully utilizes the infrastructure, so we can get opportunities that you'd never get in anywhere else just to use this stuff. Some of the races we do are just insane. There's a race in summer that they put on, and it's on TV. They have film crews there. They have $1 million worth of prize money. Like, some of the prizes are just ridiculous. Some of the money that's thrown into this stuff, it's probably not sustainable to be done forever, but you know, while I've been here, it's been a great opportunity. What have been some of your
highlights and your favourite bits of the last 7 years then?
We've touched on some of the work ones, sport ones. Sports, just the self-discovery in sport, meeting, just sharing my time with a lot of these people out in the I guess I've just matured so much in that time as well. That's probably the key highlight and takeaway, just my maturity in terms of thinking the UK is the epicenter of the world and it's so special, and when really it's not, compared to, you know, it's just, we're just a group of fortunate people over there that live a comfortable life, supported by the government in many respects. So it's, yeah, that's kind of my highlight. And there's been many, you know, I've done a lot of stuff over here. It's been really good. A lot of like hotels, restaurants, I'm kind of finished with all of this stuff. I'm just grateful that I did it. And I'm kind of like, my next phase of my life, I think I'm not going to be seeking this type of activity, because I think nowhere does it better than Dubai. I think this is, if you want those type of luxury experiences or higher end experiences, then this is the place, because the hospitality is amazing, the facilities are amazing, the weather's amazing, it's all best in class. So don't try and go to another place in the world and try and replicate this, because the other places in the world have better things on offer than hotels and dining experiences and all this stuff. So I think it's I don't have one highlight. It's just a collection, really, of just gratefulness of what I've been able to do, from where I'm from, to be able to do this stuff is, I'm just, yeah, that's my highlight, really, to where I've come, got to.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for inviting me. And like you said, I know that you didn't think that this is the type of place that I would be interested in coming.
Yes.
But actually, you know, when you reached out to me and said, you know, I'm interested in the boat life and it seems like a cool thing, do you want to come out here and we could do like a boat house swap for a bit, I was genuinely really curious, because I did have a very preconceived idea, and that's probably based on pictures and the media and what people say, and it's great to come out here and challenge that and see what it's actually like for myself. And there are some really strong things that are going on here, you know, and as someone who's not that materialistic, maybe it's not the type of place that I'd want to hang around for too long. But actually, you know, to have the swimming pool that you have just out down there with a gym, and then to look out onto that golf course, and to, you know, you can live the life here, can't you? And
yeah, it's very comfortable. But you have to, well, for me, I have to, every time, I realize that this will all go one day, and I realize that it's just a period in my life, so I don't get attached to it. I enjoy it. Every time I sit in that swimming pool, I enjoy it, because it's probably one of the best swimming pools in Dubai. It's amazing just to have that there on a golf, so looking over a golf course. I just feel so grateful every time I sit in it, to be honest. But I know it's going to be gone one day, and then it's not all about swimming pools, is it? It's about that was just a fun adventure, and it's kind of, it was good while it lasted, and time to do something different. So I don't get attached to it. I think if you get attached to it, it's a dangerous game, because you're either going to be here forever, you're going to be spending, That's what I like about the boat life, just the simpleness of it, you know. It's just so simplistic, just having everything just around you for very little money, and it's, and you can live a luxury life, really. It's almost the same as that, what we have outside. It's, you have kind of a infinity pool that just goes on the canal forever, you know. It's like an infinite.
This is a bit more brown, yeah, and murky. And
yeah, but like, you look at some of the Shropshire canals and stuff, that scenery is ridiculous, you know. It's amazing. It's just a different view, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to say. It's a different, some of your views are world class too, you know.
Mm.
You probably don't notice them as much because you've lived there forever. Like, when I come back now, I'm like, wow, these places that I grew up in, I never saw that view. Like, I go back home now and I'm just like, whoa, this is awesome. This rural environment, you know, what's going on there. Many canals down there, really nice. And I never walked the canals once when I was, like a handful of times, you know, in 28 years. So, yeah, you've got to, it's good. It's just what you make of it, I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's quite humbling to know that you can come to somewhere like this, spend a good 7-8 years working and experiencing and living life and enjoying it, right?
Yeah.
But also still stay grounded in that and come back and be grateful at the end of it all, really.
I guess you go through, it's, you realise in that time, look, there's times in the beginning where, of course, you get sucked into it and you kind of like, this is what I want, but you just realise that this stuff doesn't like make you, you can't just keep buying happiness. It's happy in that moment, and it's happy, you know, for that period of time. If you do hotels for a year and you just go there every week and you enjoy it and living in these amazing places and stuff, like, it doesn't last. The problem is you get used to it.
Mm.
And you become, and once I feel that I get used to an environment, and an environment that I should, that is amazing, that's dangerous to me, and I feel like, yeah, like, it's time to do something different. Like, when it feels special and it's amazing, that's good, but when you're taking it for granted and you're being nasty to waiters and you're demanding things and you're angry because your hotel room's like 1% less glamorous than the last one you went to, like, it's time to just have a word with yourself, I think. That's just my opinion. And some of this stuff recently when I've been going has, it's felt normal, and that's dangerous, I think. That sounds really bad that I'm saying that, but it does. Like, you become used to these environments, and then, no, you shouldn't be used to luxury like that. Like, I'm not, you know, I just want to live a steady, simple life. I don't want to be, but you need the funds to back it up as well. Like, if you want to play that game for forever, it's, you're going to be working, or you have to be a millionaire, or you have to be working a lot. Like, what you're doing, you don't need a lot of money, really. So you can either save a lot of money, or you can just not work as much and enjoy life.
Very much the philosophy I have on it, really, is that you adapt. A lot of people adapt their lifestyle to their paycheck. So basically, when you get a promotion and you go up the career ladder, you earn more money, and then you think, oh, this is nice, well, I'm going to adapt my lifestyle, buy a slightly bigger house and get a bigger mortgage, and then you have to stay in that position to continue funding it, right? Much like you would say, you'd have to work a lot and work hard to sustain living here, right? Or you've got the other option where, if you simplify your lifestyle so that you don't have to, don't have to work to sustain that, you can still have a great and happy life. And actually, a lot of the happiness research comes out, says that you don't need loads of money to be happy. You just need to see
things. I'm somebody who's been through this as well. Like, I'm not sitting here saying, look at all this theory, how clever I am. I've been through all that nonsense. Mm. So
you've lived it.
Lived it, yeah. And I come out the other side, and having cars, having, you know, all the nice stuff. I found most of the time it didn't make me happy at all. it made me happy for that. It's that like that purchase moment when you get that new car, that like honeymoon moment, and then you just worry about it. You worry about the servicing cost, you worry about, and I guess you probably, you worry about someone scratching it, you worry about it getting dirty, you worry, like, just get rid of all that worry and just have something that you don't really care about that much. And then life's okay. Like, it's just a vehicle. It doesn't matter, does it? Or it's just a bed to stay on. It's yeah. Just so I've been through that whole process. I thought all of that would answer problems for me, would solve problems for me. It didn't. Probably created more problems. So, and kind of getting rid of stuff in my life, I feel better.
That's right.
And also when my nan passed away, I that was a moment for me where we had to kind of like empty her house and stuff. And she didn't have that much stuff, but kind of seeing what I think as humans, like, we're just good hoarders, aren't we? We just collect stuff, and I've always collected stuff because I always like, well, you got to keep that and collect that. That'll be worth something. But just kind of witnessing what happens at the end of a life, and what, you know, someone comes in and basically brutally just strips down 99% of your stuff and either sells it or bins it. That's what happens at the end. And we can, you know, say that's negative or whatever, but I witnessed that with some of my family members. Can't keep all the stuff. A lot of it's got to go. So what's the point? Just get rid of it. Don't have it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Just simple. Keep it simple like you are. I think that's... And then kind of, yeah, I think if you, like what you're doing, you're kind of in society, you're not disconnected from, you know, everything, but you're kind of living sensibly at your age. I think that's a great thing. I think it's good. Cool.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and learning all about your cycling and your running and this completely, you know, world of insight, you know. Wouldn't have got that otherwise. So thank you so much for inviting me out here and being open to doing the podcast. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully keeping in touch and seeing where life takes you in the next chapter of your life, really. Yeah. So thank you again, and thanks to everyone that's listened. All the best, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care.